Blend. Open up the champagne, pop. It's my house, come on, turn it up. Coming to you live from Browns headquarters in Berea, Ohio, this is Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Hello there, and finally we are here, game number three of the preseason, the final tune-up, the penultimate preseason game between the Browns and the Buccaneers. I'm looking out at Raymond James Stadium from the team hotel right now, and that's where that game will happen tonight at 8 o'clock. Nathan Zagura and Matt Wilhelm with you for the next couple of hours here on CBD, and we're going to kind of dive into this game, what we're looking for. We want to know certainly what you're looking for, and you can call us at 216-578-0850. Our Ohio Business Machine hot topics today: what are you most looking forward to seeing tonight? The Barkevious Mingo trade, what does that mean for the Browns going forward? We're going to hear from the head coach of your Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, at 1:30, Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal at 2, and then we've got the Friday forecast at 2:30 today. Mateo, how are you, brother?
I am wonderful, and I'm excited for game days in more ways than one.
Yes, you are. So let's get into that for a second. We'll put a pause on the Browns, but let's talk about the Demons for a second. Tonight is the kickoff of your season, correct?
It absolutely is. Yeah, we have we take on Eastlake North at Eastlake North, and just similar to the Browns, we start our first two games are on the road, and so we start as road warriors. And you know, we had our walkthrough yesterday. Guys are ready, and it's exciting. And just you know, spending a little time last night, you know, with Munch to talk about an award that is named in my honor, and really just kind of, you know, bringing everything full circle of me kind of diving back into the high school football game. And I had a friend, you know, wish me good luck as well. And what really brings a smile to my face and why I'm committed to do something like this is I feel like, even though, you know, I'm here within the Browns organization, you and I, you know, we do what we do, but I now feel like, sure, I'm a part of something bigger than myself again. You know, I'm a piece of a puzzle, the same way that, you know, each and every guy fighting for an opportunity in the National Football League with the Cleveland Browns is a piece of the puzzle to something bigger than themselves. I, as a coach, can, you know, influence young men and guide them towards, you know, being hungry and understanding what winning is like.
It's awesome. And you feeling good? Good walkthrough? You feeling good for tonight's game?
Yeah, good walkthrough. And I think, you know, Jason Hall, the head coach over at Westlake High, he said that, you know, sometimes he's been coaching for, gosh, near 17 years at the high school level. And he just said, you know, sometimes, you know, you have a dumpy walkthrough and you mow down a team the next night. And then he's like, when you think you look the sharpest, you don't play all that well. But we feel like we know our opponent, but they've just had a few scrimmages, just kind of like these preseason games. You really don't know who this team is until they actually game plan and you get some of that game film. So we're going in with a strong sense of who they are, but I think it's more about us than it is about them. And, you know, I've laid out what I expect from my guys, both on special teams and in the linebacking room, and I look forward to tonight.
Are they going to be able to keep you on the sidelines, or are you going to suit up and get out there?
I will not suit up and get out there, and I already kind of told the head coach, I'm like, hey, just, you know, payroll deduct if I break one of these headsets or something of that sort, because it's not so much that I'm going to be so angry that, you know, it's going to make
me want to. It's going to be intense. I've seen you coaching a flag football team for, you know, young kids. I can only imagine,
right,
what you're going to be like.
And like I said, it's not so much that I'm going to be angry, like, at the referee or at a kid and want to break it. I'm just not going to be used to standing on the sideline, having this headset on, and having somebody up in the booth, like, jabber-jawing in my ear. And it's just going to get annoying, and I'm just going to either gracefully take it off or I'm just going to throw it, and hopefully I don't break it.
I love it. Matt, this is going to be a lot of fun. So where's the game for people in the Cleveland area or that, you know, might be out there?
It is at Eastlake North High School. So we play at Eastlake North, and then you are at Olmsted Falls before we come back for two games at home at the brand-new turf at Westlake Stadium, Westlake High School. So,
all right, so you got that going on. Then, of course, we've got the Browns tonight at 8 o'clock. Yes. Let's start off with the big news from yesterday, which, of course, was the Barkevious Mingo trade to the New England Patriots. And, you know, there was speculation when we went off the air what the compensation could be. And I saw some people say, you know, maybe it will be a conditional seventh. Well, the Browns went out there and got a fifth round pick from the New England Patriots for a guy that, you know, frankly, it seemed like they were going to cut.
Right.
And, you know, it came out today that not only were the Patriots interested, but so were the Detroit Lions, and that created a market. But I think a tip of the cap to Sashi and company to get a fifth-round pick for a guy that did not look like he was going to make this roster ultimately.
Absolutely. And even further than that, we took essentially $5 million in dead money. He was either going to occupy a roster spot and really not – and play a similar role to that he has in the last 3 years, which is – not all productive as of a sack guy and just of a role player on defense and a special teams guy. Okay, we're going to pay that guy $5 million. And in this case, we were able to open up that roster spot by trading him and saving that $5 million and getting that fifth round pick as compensation. And to go back and look at what, you know, Sashi Brown, and I know they have yet to play a football game, but look what Sashi Brown and Andrew Berry, Paul D. Podesta, you know, drafted, I'll say fourth round and beyond. You know, in Joe Schobert, and you look at Hollywood Higgins and Jordan Payton and guys like that that are fighting to make this football team or going to make this football team and have a role in year one. And I think that's why, as you said, compliments to them on doing it right. While, you know, I watched, you know, Colin Coward said that Barkevious Mingo was going to go to New England, fit into their system so well, and he's become a baller. That is yet to be determined because we have yet to see him show that, not even in flashes, on a consistent level here in the NFL, because if he had it in him, he would show it in flashes. Now, if he got in a scheme, he would show it consistently, and that's yet to be determined. He hasn't done it here. Maybe he'll do it in New England, but I think the jury's still out on Barkevious Mingo, and what we did fits who we are that started when Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry, Paul D. Podesta, and Hugh Jackson took over this organization.
Yeah, when you look at this again for the team in 2016, you talked about, you know, going through the draft class for him, and this is a fifth-round pick. Well, here's who they got in the fifth round this year, and you hit on a couple of them. Jordan Payton, all-time leading receiver in UCLA history. I think a guy that's scratching and clawing to make this team. How about Spencer Drango? That was a fifth-round pick this year, as was Hollywood Higgins, and Trey Caldwell, who's been injured. We haven't seen him yet, but a guy that's probably going to end up on this team in some capacity, practice squad or otherwise. But Spencer Drango is looking like an early contributor. Hollywood Higgins looking like an early contributor as well. And I've been told that we're going to see a lot more of Hollywood Higgins and even getting some work with the ones as a big slot receiver tonight. So that's something to keep an eye on with him as he tries to emerge, because there's a chance that, you know, when the season opens up, he could end up battling Hawk for some of those slot routes and some of those, you know, in certain third down situations where you need a bigger body that can run good routes and catch the ball in contested areas. Hollywood Higgins could earn some early playing time.
Absolutely, and I like it. And remember, you know, what, going back, I don't think it was last year, the year before last, 2014, the role that Miles Austin played for us. You know, we missed a lot of camp with a hamstring injury, but, you know, he was a 35 to 45 reception guy, and a dozen of those converted first downs. And I think that is a great opportunity for Hollywood Higgins as a good route runner going against most likely an undersized nickel. You know, if it were Jamar Taylor for us or it were K'Wan Williams, Hollywood Higgins would have that look for us. Imagine coming out, you know, Pryor, Higgins, Gordon. You're going, what, 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", across, and you got Barnage at 6'6". So we're not – the itty-bitty,
not bad,
you know, itty-bitty guys we were in past years.
No, and then we got Corey Coleman running around as well. But, yes, I think it'll be fun to see those receivers. But it just goes to show that fifth round is going to produce, I think, two guys that make contributions this year to the Cleveland Browns team. So a good move by the Browns overall. We talked a little bit about it yesterday, but for people who didn't hear, I don't necessarily know what spot Barkevious Mingo was occupying on this team had they kept him. It certainly wouldn't have been – he wasn't playing much outside linebacker. He was, at best, a third-team inside linebacker. So when people kind of try to figure out who benefits from this, I think it benefits a guy potentially like a Don Jones or maybe a Marlon Moore, just somebody that could be an extra spot that could go to a special teams type of a guy. Or if you're looking at the outside linebacker room, you know, if they continue to, if Ogba is considered to be a D-end, you know, Cam Johnson, number 57, who's, we'll see what kind of minutes he gets tonight. That could tell us a lot if he has a chance to make this team.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think even furthermore, and I'll hold true with kind of my first inclination of what might happen for the Cleveland Browns is, you mentioned a few of the names that, you know, might be slotted for that extra roster spot that have earned the opportunity to make this football team or on the bubble to make this football team. And they very well might when we have the opportunity to get from 90 to 75, then down to 53 on that Saturday in preparation for the Philadelphia Eagles. But that's, what, 9 days or 10 days, I'm sorry, before we actually play a game. And you and I have talked in past years with different regimes, and it happens across the NFL where teams get to 53 as you prep for that first game. You know, guys are a little banged up. They might not be up for that week one opponent, or if something happens in tonight's game or next week against the Bears, you lose a little bit of depth. Or, and also, as I've talked, you know, Sags here with the Cleveland Browns, you know, their eyes and ears are to the streets to see what's going on with 31 other teams as other good players who are bubble guys or maybe vets that just got a little expensive and they've had some young players really step up throughout their draft classes and so on and so forth to assume starter roles. Those guys get cut. You know, say a guy with a $3 or $4 million number gets cut, and then we can sign him for a vet minimum and pay him $900,000 on a 1 year deal and bring him in, sure, and immediately put him in a role, as opposed to just, you know, saying a Don Jones or a Darius Jennings has earned the right to, you know, to make the clear. What, you know, at this point right now, it's a cut and dry, you know, win lose business. And if we can go get a guy that will help us win now, instead of just giving a guy, you know, kind of like a favor and a pat on the back to make this team, I think we go do that.
I think we do as well, and I think we've heard them say that, you know, the roster's not set till it's set. And we know that every single year the 53 is set, and then by, you know, that Tuesday of game week or Monday of game week, there are enough changes because, you know, a couple guys have been picked up that were cut, and the Browns are number two in the waiver order. So anybody who gets cut by a team, the Browns have the second crack at them after the Tennessee Titans. So there are going to be opportunities for some good players who don't make it for whatever reason somewhere else that they could end up here with the Cleveland Browns. That's certainly something to keep an eye on. Let's go to the phones now. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. It's game day, so we want to hear from you. We got Jay in Fort Lauderdale. Jay, welcome to the show.
Jay,
are you there?
Oh, he has dropped.
Oh, well, then we don't have Jay. All right. Well, what we'll do is take a break. When we come back, we'll get your phone calls going. 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850 is the number to call up. The Browns and the Bucks preseason game three, the final dress rehearsal, as it were, for the 2016 regular season, as they get ready to start the season September the 11th against Philadelphia. Zagura and Wilhelm, one in Tampa, one in Berea. All Browns on ESPN 850 WKNR.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
The sun is out here in Tampa. Maybe some afternoon scattered showers. Should be clear at game time, though, for the Browns and Bucks. 8 o'clock at Raymond James Stadium. Jason Gibbs dancing in a very distracting manner to my left here at the team hotel as we get ready for game three of the preseason. Yeah, that's right, Matt.
What are you so excited about?
What are you so excited about, Gibbs? He's almost done putting together the pregame show. That was the almost done with the pregame show dance, apparently. So we're asking you guys, what are you looking forward to the most in tonight's game? And our good friend, announcer Bob in Millersburg, has once again graced us with a top 10 list of things that he is looking forward to in tonight's game. Matt Wilhelm, are you ready?
I am ready.
Number one, if given the opportunity, can Carl Nassib sack Jameis Winston? Number two, the what to watch for list based on the experienced insight of CBD's Matt Wilhelm.
Ooh.
Number three, how improved will the Cleveland defense be and what linebackers will shine? Number four, can Zagura keep his cool again on air if threatened with another pregame stampede of opponents like when the Falcons rolled out last week? Yeah, it's true. We were on Channel 5 and our seats were right up against the line where I guess we were between us and the players, and their whole team ran out there and almost like ran us over off the set. But I did keep my cool. Appreciate you for noticing that, Bob. There will be no show for us this week on News Channel 5. We'll be back for Game 4, so we'll see if the Bears try to take me down. Number five, and this is an interesting question. Will it take the fourth preseason game to settle the competition to be the Browns' kicker? And that is an interesting one and something certainly to keep an eye on. Travis Coons continues to be listed atop the depth chart. He did take the first team reps down here in Tampa, but so far Murray has outperformed him, at least in the things that have been open to the public. And that's, I think, an interesting battle. Because do you, when you go from 90 to 75 after this game, Matt, do you still want to have two kickers on the roster?
No, you don't. And that's something that you might do is if you don't have a decision on either, and maybe you want to have a little bit of a break and give them more opportunity. You'll have two after the 75 cut, and you'll carry two into the Bears game. You may, in fact, carry two knowing that one will go after you even get down to 53, and then even furthermore as you dig in and start that week. And then that's, say that second kicker takes the spot vacated by Barkevious Mingo, who's going to make this football team most likely, and then you cut the one, of course, that loses the competition, and you can sign whoever you want to that spot. So I wouldn't be opposed, because if it's as close as people think it is, Chris Tabor is going to want to have every opportunity to be with these guys on the practice field or on the game field kicking the football so that Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown can meet about something like this and make a decision one way or the other.
Agreed, and that'll be – I think that tonight you hope we score a lot of touchdowns, but I think for this team, you know, it would be good to see some field goal drives generated as well so we can see these guys under pressure trying to make kicks and see what happens there. Number six, who will catch the next artillery shell from RG3, Gordon, Pryor, Coleman, or Barnage? Number seven, will the success of RG3 against Atlanta inspire him to take silly chances, or will he continue learning the importance of no turnovers and protecting himself? I think number seven is being ingrained in him,
yes.
And I think he's going to be fine with that.
And I think that's something that
they demand.
It's part of playing quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. It may not have been in the past and never emphasized the way it has been, but to be the starter and for you to have the opportunity and the blessing to trot out there as the starting quarterback for Hugh Jackson, for Pep Hamilton, it's going to be to not be reckless with the football, because that is the quickest way that a team like this, who is turning things around and is going to have some adversity already facing them, giving the football to the other team and getting reckless with the football is the last thing we can do.
Yeah, and Hugh Jackson won't tolerate it. Number eight, will Joe Haden look sharp, or will the Tampa Bay receivers rough him up like an Olympic swimmer? Joe Haden has looked very sharp. He had an interception each of the 2 days that we had the joint practices. He looks bigger, stronger, and faster than I have seen him in a long time. And he said to me this is the best he's felt and the best shape he's ever been in. He said it's interesting when you know you can't work your lower body for a time. All you can work is your upper body, and it's made him much stronger across the top, and then he got his legs back where they need to be. So he feels very good, and I think he's key to this defense. I think he really is going to be. If he can become, you know, a player, a Pro Bowl player like he was, I think that will go a long way to helping this defense.
No doubt. And I mean, and honestly, you said, you know, the best shape of his life. Did you see the ESPN article, ESPN.com article about either the coaches or players who's from almost essentially, it seemed like almost every team, and it was like a marquee name for the most case, where either the coach or the player themselves commented that they're in the best shape of their lives. So 2016 is of getting in the best shape of your life.
It is the year of great shape, which is good. And yes, that's always
good. No more
good
fat
and
out of
talk.
Shape. We're all going to get in shape finally.
Yeah. You never hear a player say, yeah, I'm in terrible shape.
Yeah, I just been, you know.
Things aren't good for me right now.
I've got McDonald's on autopilot and Cheesecake Factory, you know, just hitting there every other day.
Yeah, you don't hear that at all. Number nine, how will the Browns react, if at all, to those Cleveland 76ers comments? So the former Bucks GM, Mark Domenech, now on ESPN, said that the Browns are basically the Cleveland 76ers and they're trying to tank and throw it all away. And I think he sounds like an ignoramus, quite frankly, when he says that, because that's not what they're doing. They're trying to win, put together the best team they can that gives them short-term success, but also keeping in mind that it's better to do it this way than to bring in a bunch of high-priced 31, 32-year-olds that actually don't really change your winning that much and set your franchise back. So I think his comment is baseless, and I think he sounds like an idiot when
he
says
that. And
does
the comment come from the fact that we traded Mingo yesterday?
No, he said it when that we should trade. But all we're doing is trying to trade anybody that's got any value to us and get rid of everybody, and basically we could care less about winning. We're tanking, essentially, is what he was saying.
Oh, okay.
He doesn't know
Hugh
Jackson.
Tell that to Hugh Jackson.
I was going to say, he doesn't know Hugh Jackson.
Hugh Jackson
he's got a big chip
on
his shoulder.
Hugh Jackson has a belief that he's going to go 16-0 this year.
Okay. I don't think you're wrong about that. That's what he is chasing.
Right.
I mean, that's what he is after.
Yes.
He's going to certainly do everything he can to get there. And then finally, will someone bribe the Raymond James Stadium PA announcer to play Rebecca Black's song Friday during a timeout?
No.
I sure hope so.
No.
That would be a delight. No. I would definitely be caught dancing on their big screen and,
yes,
and
you
lip syncing. Oh yeah.
And high-fiving a player.
Somebody, yeah. Getting in between the official and the end zone and high-fiving somebody, preferably Crow after a touchdown.
Hey,
so those are the top 10 things Bob's looking for. We want to know what you guys are looking for. 216-578-0850. And, of course, we'll go to the phones right now, and we will begin our trip on the phones with Marcus in Chardon. Marcus, welcome.
Yeah, thanks a lot. You know, I just want to see some tackling. That's what I'm anxious to
yeah.
see, and wide receivers. But I kind of had a thought just, you know, for the sake of talk radio. With the way the league is calling games defensively, you can't come across really – you know, with these hard hits, you're going to get flagged. With the receivers as deep as the Browns appear to maybe be and having to make these cuts, what would you think of taking an athletic receiver that has good hands, put him in a position almost just like a free safety, and have his main job to be to go get the ball, almost like an Ed Reed type player? Would a defensive coordinator or a team even consider something like that?
I don't believe so, and I think, you know, just relevant to the Cleveland Browns, I think the reason why Pierre Desir's been getting looks at safety is because he could potentially be that guy, that ball hawk, you know, simply going for the football. You have him at a significant amount of depth. But here's the kicker. Whether we're in a six-man box, a seven-man box, or an eight-man box, which means we have six guys up front at the line of scrimmage, we have seven men at the line of scrimmage, or we have eight men at the line of scrimmage, we have yet to stop the run. Okay, and before we start having a guy floating around, you know, really not paying any attention to the run, we have to stop the run first. And I think that's when you look at why Ed Reed was so great, was because the front five, the front six, the front seven of that Baltimore Raven team were immovable objects and a tackle collector in Ray Lewis. And guys off the edge yep. like Terrell Suggs that allow them the flexibility of Ed to not have to fly up there in the run and fit anywhere. It was... you know, maybe collect an assist or a tackle on a chunk run that goes 8 yards or more, but stand back there and be the ball hawk that's going to make him the Hall of Fame safety.
Yeah, I think you're right. To be able to have that luxury, there are a lot of things that you need to have happen. So I don't know if we're in a position to have that. You've seen some guys. Tony Lippett is the one that comes to mind most recently that was a wide receiver at Michigan State and actually a very good one who's now playing corner for the Miami Dolphins. But I don't know, has anybody ever taken a wide receiver and put him at safety? Has that ever even happened in the NFL? And
no.
There's so much that they need to learn about
yes.
the defense and their reads and their reactions. And when you're a wide receiver, you know, it's funny, you know, talking to Al Saunders, a wide receiver who actually learns his responsibilities for all three receiver positions is rare. Receivers typically know exactly what they're supposed to do on any given play.
Sure.
To be a free safety, you need to know what everybody on the defense is doing. You also need to understand what quarterbacks are looking for in defenses. And I think there's a lot of subtlety and nuance to that position. It's basically, in some ways, you know, I know the middle linebacker, they say, is the quarterback of the defense, but on the back end, isn't the safety, free
yes.
safety, basically the quarterback of everything that's happening?
Yes.
And that's not something a receiver is just going to jump into and be good at.
No, it's not. And the only time you ever see a receiver come on the football field is that prevent last play Hail Mary situation
right.
because you put a guy like Terrell Pryor or a Calvin Johnson or a Josh Gordon, 6'4", can jump out of the gym, you know, and out jump in some cases their wide receivers in that situation to knock it down, to catch it, to deflect it out of the back of the end zone. But it's one role that you might have had 10 reps at collectively all year in preparation for a situation you might have come up once or twice all season long.
Correct. And it's, yeah, that's something you see when they're trying to knock down the Hail Mary or something like that. Let's go to Dave in Canton now. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Good, man.
Good. And, you know, you hit on a couple subjects I was going to speak on. Number one is the national media. You know, Cleveland has really taken a beating with these guys, Merrill Hodge and Mark, the guy that was the GM up at the Lions for a few years.
Mark Dominic, who's with the Bucks.
Yeah. you know what? And I just don't think they're deserving of it, really. I mean, I think they're a lot better team than a lot of people think. I think the defensive front seven needs some work. You know, yes. Shelton's getting pushed around more than what anybody would thought he would this year, in my opinion. He's getting pushed around quite a bit. But, you know, they fix that. You take away everybody in the AFC North, okay? You take away their best receiver, Cleveland's best receiver, Cincinnati's best receiver. I would rather have Cleveland's staff take away the marquee receiver. I'd rather have Cleveland's staff than anybody in the AFC North, okay?
You mean their receiving happen. Group?
Yeah. I mean,
I would agree with that.
You know, quarterback, you know, RG3 wasn't a rookie of the year for nothing. He wasn't a second-round pick in the draft for nothing. He's got some athletic qualities to him.
He does, but until he proves it, you got to consider our quarterback situation right now the weakest in our division. Now, could he jump up?
Yes, but
he's behind Ben and Flacco, and Dalton's been playing great football the last few years.
You know, I'll say that, but he's not somebody like I'm trying to use an example, you know, but he's not awful. Let's just say that he's got some qualities to make this offense roll if put points on the board. I don't think we're going to be shut out very many games this
right.
year.
No, I agree. Okay. And here's your point. Here's again, I'm also very critical of those. Who take the easy way out and just come with something negative instead of taking a little time talking about the negative but putting a little bit of a positive twist on it when it comes to something like the Cleveland Browns. But here's my best inclination of why people, especially from a national perspective, who don't really know this team or what's going on here in the last 6 months, are sometimes so negative. And I guess it comes down to the twist I'll put on is, like, imagine you're a gambler, okay? And since the Cleveland Browns have come back, you know, how many winning seasons have they had and how many losing seasons have they had? And it's so easy if you were to roll the dice for it to come up, you know, with, say, it's a die with wins and losses, and it's going to have, you know, 14 of the 16 years have been losing, or 13 of them have been losing, and 3 have been winning seasons, right? If you're going to roll that die, the odds are that it's going to be a losing season, it's going to be a disappointment, it's going to be the same old Cleveland Browns. And I think that's why the national narrative and perspective about the Cleveland Browns is always going to be as Dominic and Merrill Hodge has taken it. And so I think ultimately they don't want to put
it. Just got to prove it.
As RG3 is going to prove that he's not the worst quarterback in our division, you know, the Cleveland Browns have to prove that they're not the same old Cleveland Browns. So there's going to be a different fight in this football team that Nathan and I see. There's going to be a different explosion offensively that we've not seen here in a long time. And that's where the optimism lies for us who know this team. But for those that don't, they're expecting the Cleveland Browns to trot out there, you know, in our division with the Bengals, with the Ravens, and with the Steelers. They're going to be so great, and we're still going to be the bottom dweller until we bloody their nose, you know, on the second week of the season, and we've already gone on the road and maybe got a victory in Philadelphia against a team that's not going to be that great, and we beat the Ravens, and we're sitting at 2-0. That's what it's going to take for people to go, Cleveland. Look at Cleveland. You know, look what they're doing. They beat the Eagles on the road, and they beat their division rival, you know, at home in their opener, which they haven't won an opener in how long, you know? And it's also even more so the way they did it, which is what you and I believe, you know, this team, it's not going to be a dainty flag football-esque type of feel. It's going to be punchy in the mouth, be productive, you know, in the air, run the football at will, and stop people on defense and limit their opportunities in the scoring zone. That, to me,
That's
is
right.
how I feel this team's going to win football games or look like a winning football team that is on the cusp of something great in years beyond.
And certainly that's what we want to see from this Browns team. And tonight, kind of the final tune-up in the preseason, at least the most extensive action the starters will see before the opener, as you said, September the 11th against the Eagles. When we come back, we got Reg out there. We got Dan. We got Blanca, some great callers, some CBD friends of the show. So we'll have them when we come back. We'll also hear from the head coach, Hugh Jackson, and more as our first hour of Cleveland Browns Daily from Tampa, Florida, rolls on.
There ain't no secrets anymore.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Game day from Tampa, where the Browns and the Bucks will meet up in 6.5 hours at Raymond James Stadium, national TV, CBS. We're going to go back to the phone lines before we hear from our head coach, Hugh Jackson. But let's go to Reg in Youngstown. Reg.
Hey, guys. How you doing? How's everything?
Good, man. How
good,
are you?
Reg. How are you?
Oh, good, man. Great, great. Hey, fellas, I was just, you know, listening to what, you know, the gentleman was saying about some of those writers and reporters are saying. You know, I always believe, Matt, from the time that I play football and coach football, that normally when people talk about you, they're concerned, because when they're not concerned, you know, they say, oh, that's the same old team anyway. But when you hear them talking, they're thinking to themselves that there might be something to this now. And I think ever since Coach Jackson's come there, that he definitely has put his stamp on how he wants that team to be. And that's what I love about him, man, because he reminds me of how I was when coaching. Because why I say that, everybody on that team has to be accountable to do something on a team, or else you get. I like that he can let Mingo go. I think that is great, because if he can't play nowhere, they're going to try him everywhere, then let him go somewhere else. God bless him. If he maybe makes it somewhere else, that'd be good. But he just couldn't do the job for our team, and if he can't do nothing, why keep him? You know, I like that, man. I love it. I love it. I'm telling
you. That's what you got to do. I think, and to be able to turn that into an asset, as the Browns were able to do in the fifth round in the Barkevious Mingo trades case, I think it's a good thing. And they're being honest, and they're assessing this team for who's going to be here and help. That's what this year's about, finding out, I think. Who are the guys that are going to be the cornerstones and the building blocks for this team? And if somebody doesn't fit into it and you can get something for them, I say you do it. And that's clearly what Sashi Brown was thinking as it related to Barkevious Mingo.
Yeah, and I think the why some people might look at this as, oh, that's just the Browns. This is a new way of thinking. There is a new mentality behind making moves, signing a player, drafting a player, as there never has been here before. So, and that's why also, to go back to, you know, kind of our topic from last segment, is like the national narrative, they don't know because they have not been here. It's just, you know, word of mouth and the game of telephone about what's going on here. But still, the easiest take in the world is, oh, that's the same old Browns, and that's why they did that. No, the reason why we did it is something that, Nathan, you and I have pointed out already. Barkevious Mingo was probably not going to make this football team, or might have made this football team, simply because he counts $5 million against our books, and he might be just a little bit better than someone else simply because he's got NFL experience as we try to work to get younger. But he has not paid off, you know, as the sixth overall pick in any year of the NFL draft, especially in the first round. He has not paid off dividend-wise. We're paying him, and we can create a roster spot and get a fifth-round pick back that fits into our analytics and our way of thinking. That makes all the sense in the world to me. So it's just the negative aspect and the negative narrative is something that I'm just kind of like over. But I can understand why it exists, as I pointed out last segment, but you've got to look to the positive and put a positive or optimistic look as to why we've done it.
Agreed, and it's something that they're just going to have to unfortunately live with until they prove it. Now, I will say today on Good Morning Football, Mike Garofalo was there, the NFL Network reporter, and was basically saying how all of a sudden, you know, Sashi Brown was an unknown guy, and people around the league are kind of just like in awe, or certainly very impressed by what he's been able to do, his draft day maneuverings, what he was able to do in this trade with Barkevious Mingo, and that there is a real sense of optimism about this Browns organization that is growing around the league. So I think that there are some positive things being said out there in addition to the ignorant. I mean, Mark Dominic, what he said is just, to me, it's just unreal that he said that, and it's just ridiculous. But I think that there is certainly are – there are some positive things coming out. And as I said, that was today on NFL Network. Mike Garofalo, very impressed with what's been going on so far with this Browns team. Let's go back to the phones, 216-578-0850. Again, 216-578-0850. Dan in Hershey Pod. Dan, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
You got it, man.
Yeah, Dominic got me upset. I was going to talk about that, but you kind of beat that to death already. this is going to sound kind of random, but bear with me here. I picked up Draft Day in a bargain bin. You know, I like to watch the special features, and I was watching the movie, listening to the commentary. It was kind of cool. One of the guys that wrote the movie did the commentary. One of them was a Browns fan, grew up in Cleveland. And there's a point in the movie where Sonny Weaver looks in the camera, and he goes, you know, just once, I want a team on the field that's my team, that I can say is my team. And it made me think of what's going on now, And as I watch the game tonight, I mean, I'm leaning to the point now where, you know, if I'm Sashi Brown, I would like to see him, if there's any decision to be made between somebody who's been here and somebody who's new, I've been watching us for years now. This looks like one of the best draft classes I have ever seen, top to bottom. Matt talks about people flashing. I see somebody flash. I go, oh, it's Derek Kindred. Oh, it's Jordan Payton. Boy, first of all,
flashing.
Jordan Payton is bigger than I thought he was. Man, that's a lot. That's a
thick-bodied receiver.
Oh
yes.
Man, I mean, and I go, wow, Scooby Wright. So I mean, if there's a choice between, you know, a guy like that, man, let's put his team on the field. And I just wanted to know what you guys think about that. I think there's certain veterans you got to keep, but if there's a choice on those marginal guys, you know, Marlon Moore, Jordan Payton. I think let's just go Jordan Payton, man. Let's get it going in his direction.
Well, I certainly think that is the direction that they are trending. I mean, I think that's the way that they're going, right? And you've seen it kind of in the moves to move on from older players and try to get younger. Now, the freeing up of the Mingo slot maybe gives you another guy to be on teams. Maybe that helps Marlon Moore make this team. But Jordan Payton started to come on, but I think that if you were to look at the rookies, he's the one that seems to be on the bubble. I think it's going to be imperative on him if he gets opportunities today to make plays, and certainly against Chicago, he's going to have to come out there and I think really try to state his case to make this football team, because in some ways it's unfair. He was kind of in the hole because of UCLA, but he's come in and, you know, I know that he's considered to be behind Ricardo Lewis. We know he's behind Corey Coleman and Hollywood Higgins. So of those four rookies, I think right now he checks in at number four.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think those in tonight's football game, and we don't necessarily know how much we're going to see of the starters, but I think of that next wave of players that start to creep in either by unit or, you know, if they're mass substitutions, meaning, you know, Hugh Jackson maybe after the first drive of the second half, you know, pulls the starters or pulls most of the starters, the next wave of players that come in that's going to make up, you know, roster spot 35 to 53, I think to continue something that we've said, they're going to be the guys that are going to be the core of our special teams units. They're going to be one play away, and tonight is a great understanding of who those guys are. If a guy is buried or has been buried on the depth chart and he doesn't come in that second wave, most likely odds are he's still fighting, you know, for maybe one of five spots that the bottom, you know, 48 to 53, they're still fighting, and then all of the way, you know, Isaiah Crowell used the Chicago Bears game in 2014 to make this football team by balling out and being ready. There's only a number of spots on this football team that are going to be up and available, I believe, by the time we get to that Bears game. And it's probably going to be.
I completely agree.
It's going to be less than five spots, maybe four spots.
I completely agree with you.
But there might be a dozen names for four spots. And then you get into an offensive-minded head coach or our depth at every position along the defensive line, outside linebacker, two places, or at corner. So there's a lot of things that are going to get figured out, because those guys in that Bears game are going to play a lot of football.
Yes, they will play a lot of football, and they will be trying to play either to make this team or find their way onto the practice squad or find their way onto somebody else's practice squad or make another team in the NFL. That's a very important game to a lot of the players in the NFL, that fourth preseason game, because it really is their last chance to put something out there that could keep them in the National Football League, which is what they certainly want to do. As G.I. George points out, you know, when they think that the Browns are the 76ers, Joe Thomas would have been traded by before the draft if the Browns were trying to be the 76ers.
Yeah,
Joe Thomas
sure.
is still here.
For sure.
Now, it may be at some point in the season there becomes an offer that's too good, but I believe they want him here, and they want to win. Hugh Jackson wants to win. And when we come back, I'm going to play my conversation with the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, and you're going to hear what he has to say about the chip on his shoulder and what drives him. And there are no doubts when you listen to that this is a guy committed to winning as soon as possible. We'll be back with Hugh Jackson when CBD rolls on.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Earlier this week, I sat down with the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson, talked to him about the joint practices with the Bucks and this game tonight and just why he feels like this team has the chance to do something special. What motivates them? Here's the head coach of your Cleveland Browns, Hugh Jackson.
What were your overall thoughts?
I thought there was some good work, you know, on all three phases, special teams, offense, and defensively. I didn't get to see much of the defense because I spent all my time on the offense, but I thought for the offensive players, we kind of started slow but then got going. You know, obviously the elements, we got to learn to tune all that out. You know, it's hot, but that's the way it's going to be when we go to Miami. It's the way it's going to be when we're in Cleveland, you know, early in the year. So we can't worry about the elements. I've always talked about us being a football team that doesn't worry about elements. We play in elements because that's the way football is played. So we need to make sure we tune that out. But I thought overall it was really good work for a football team.
What is the goal in a joint practice like this?
I think what's really important is to see another defensive team, another offensive team, another special teams. Obviously, we're going to play a four-man front in our first regular season game. Our defense is a 3-4 defensive football team, so it allows us the possibility of working on some things that we need to for down the road, both offensively and defensively and special teams. So it gives us an opportunity to see something different, be in a different environment, and, again, grow our football team.
What was something that stood out to you as a big positive today on the offensive side of the ball?
I thought Robert did some really good things. I really did. It was good to see Josh out there, Gordon catching, you know, and Terrell Pryor catching and Corey Coleman catching. I thought Joe Thomas is a true leader. You know, he is really, truly the leader of that offensive football team. And because he told the guys, hey, let's pick it up. Let's go. And I saw some guys respond. And that's what you got to have. You got to have the internal pressure, you know, especially from your good players that gets the team to rise up and play. And I thought he did a great job of that today.
You mentioned the receivers. It was the first time that you've gotten to see Josh Gordon, Corey Coleman, Andrew Hawkins, and Terrell Pryor on the field at the same time. What was that like, and how were they in their return to action?
Well, they're pretty.
Josh looks good out there.
Yes, they do. They all look good in their uniforms, and obviously Hawk being a small guy, but he's a small, quick guy. He can make some plays. So it's good to have them all back. And again, we're just going to be very cautious with them and make sure we take care of them. But get them. I needed these guys to play. You know, we need to plan a game, you know, where all of a sudden it's rough and tough. And because that's what football is. And I think the guys know that. And we can only get better as a football team with those guys out there. So they need to be out practicing, being out preparing, and being out getting ready for a game.
How important is it that you get to go against a team that happens to have very good corners, a veteran in Brent Grimes, Altron Werner, and then the rookie Vernon Hargraves III?
It's really important. You know, I think it's major because, again, we're also still evaluating our team, as you mentioned. It gives us a chance to kind of see a barometer of where we are. And I think we're doing some good things, but I think there's some other things that we need to continue to improve and get better at real fast.
What was something on the offense that stood out to you as a point of emphasis for you to improve that you still want to work on?
Well, I still think our first step's everywhere. You know, I think, again, I think it was a little bit of the heat, you know, but we didn't play at the tempo that I like for us to play at. We need to get up, get down, and go, you know, because, again, we want to make the heat one of our advantages, not a disadvantage, you know. And like I told the guys at the end, sometimes you got to fake it. You know, you can't worry about the heat. If you got to tell yourself it's cold, it's zero degrees, whatever you got to do, you got to do. Because we play at a high tempo, and today I thought we slowed down just a little bit.
On the defensive side of the ball coming out of Atlanta, you said that wasn't good enough. You weren't happy with what you saw, especially in the run defense. What needs to happen to clean that up?
We got to do our job. You know, I think you got to do your job and don't do anybody else's job. You know, we got to play in our gaps where we're supposed to play, and we got to tackle. I mean, at the end of the day, those are the fundamental things that you have to do on defense, just like blocking and catching and throwing on offense. I mean, it's fundamentals. And so, again, I've told our coaches what we need to get done. And me and Rave talked, you know, several times, and we're on it. You know, again, how fast we're going to get that shored up. I mean, we're going to work at it. We've been working at it, and we want to see it show up this Friday.
I know you mentioned earlier you're with the defense a lot, the offense a lot today, so you didn't see much of the defense. Well, Joe Hayden had an interception. Jamar Taylor had an interception.
Oh, thank you. Hallelujah.
Dominique Alexander had an interception
as
well.
That's good stuff.
But those two, now getting Joe Hayden back, the elevation of Jamar Taylor and the opportunity you're giving him, what does that mean to this defense to have those guys right now?
Well, we have other guys that can make plays on the ball, you know, and that's the name of the game. The thing that we talk about as a football team is on defense, we got to take the ball away from the offense. And I think that's how you win football games. And on offense, we got to keep the ball. Can't turn it over. In special teams, we got to protect the ball and get turnovers. So that is one of the huge keys in the National Football League to winning games. And so it's good to know that we have some guys over there going after the ball. And that's very important as we move forward.
Today was the first time Josh Gordon's gone against somebody not wearing a Cleveland Browns jersey in a long time. It was also the same for Joe Hayden. Mm-hmm. What did you hope to see from him, and what can he mean to this defense?
I think what Joe is one of our leaders. You know, I think we all know what kind of player he is. He's one of the best corners in this league. And if he gets back to where I know he's going to get to, it gives us confidence that we have a guy that can shut people down. And I think Jamar is not far behind. I think he's working extremely hard and trying to get there. But Joe Hayden is one of the best corners in this league, and we expect him to play that way.
I know that you're a tenacious individual and a tenacious leader. Is the tenacity of Jamar Taylor something that stuck out to you? Because watching him today in the one-on-ones, so physical, mm-hmm. and plays much bigger than his stature.
You have to. That's the way this game is. I mean, this game is played with a lot of passion. And I try to coach it that way, and I expect our players to play that way. You know, there's another level for this football team. And I think it's guys like Jamar and Joe Hayden and Dominic Davis that's got to bring all these other guys with them. You know, it's no different on offense. Joe and Robert and the rest of us, they have to bring all the other guys with them because we all have a level that we have to play at and we have to get to, and we got to get there fast.
Do you feel like you get one of the things, you know, you talk about that passion, and you mentioned Davis, who came over from the Jets, and that was a guy that, you know, averaged over 100 tackles. You'd think they'd want to keep him, and now they basically said, you're a free agent. You can go sign somewhere. A chip on their shoulder. I think he does. I think mm-hmm. Jamar Taylor, a former second-round pick who was discarded on draft day, has a chip on his shoulder. Joe Hayden has a chip on his shoulder. How important is that?
Because Coach Jackson has one on his shoulder,
too. I know. You big one. That's good.
That's what this is all about. I mean, we have something to prove. You know, I think all of us do. I mean, guys have been, you know, not going to say discarded, but they've been removed from where they were, you know, and I'm sure a lot of those guys wanted to be where they were. So at the same time, there's a reason why it happened. So I think those guys look at that and they want to show, whether it's themselves, their teammates, or whoever, that they belong, you know, and it's like all of us. And I think we have to have a chip on our shoulder as a football team and as an organization, because that's something we want to be. We want to be one of the best. And in order to do that, you got to have something that fuels your fire.
And you got steps to take, and the next big step you'll take after the practice tomorrow is, of course, Friday night, mm-hmm. the third preseason game. Many consider that to be the biggest tune-up. Do you have an expectation yet on the game plan in terms of how long you want to see the starters in that third game?
No, I haven't thought about it yet, but I think, again, coming out of these practices, I'll have a very clear vision of what we want to accomplish. We love to have them play longer because I think they need to, but at the same time, you know, you just never know how you come out of these practices from a health standpoint. So, again, we got to make sure that our team is getting better. That we're playing together as a unit, offense, defense, and special teams, but also that our players are out there playing and giving us the best that they have.
How hard is it as a coach? This is something I've always wondered. Is you realize in a couple of weeks, the season kicks off, and you're going to have 53 guys on the Cleveland Browns. Mm-hmm. Right now, you have 90. And,
right.
I imagine that in some cases, the cream is rising, and in other cases, there are intense battles. How do you focus your energies on the team as a whole, given that, you know, a large percentage of people wearing these uniforms won't be here soon?
Right. That's so true. But at the same time, all I can do is coach the guys that are here, you know, and then when the team is here, when the 53 is decided, I'm going to coach them too. So like I told all of our guys, I love each and every one of them, you know, and if you don't make it here, hopefully you learned a lot of lessons being with us that give you an opportunity to do something special somewhere else. So I think it's important that guys always put their best foot forward. And we're just trying to just have an environment where our whole team can get better, and each individual player can get better day in and day out.
Is it safe to assume the guys we saw return to practice today and compete against another team are going to be able to play Friday, and Gordon and Coleman?
I truly believe they have a chance, but I'll have to get with our medical staff
sure.
and make sure, you know, just where they are. But I think, you know, I'm looking forward to watching those guys play. We need to play them in the game. They know they need to play in the game, and I think they want to play in the game.
All right, Coach, if there's one thing that can come out of Friday, last question, that would make you the happiest Hugh Jackson you could be, what would it be?
Win, because that's what this is all about. At the end of the day, it's still about winning. And I like winning. I don't like losing. The last 2 weeks have been a little tough for me. So we'll find a way, but we're going to keep getting better. I know that.
You look at Hugh Jackson, a guy who wants to win, and they went through some game situations on Tuesday, Matt, where they were playing kind of Wednesday on 2-minute drill, and he was just saying, you know, we've got to win the game. We've got to win the game here. And basically Tampa had the ball and the opportunity to drive through. The Browns stopped them three consecutive times on that move the ball 2-minute drill situation. And finally, the last one he wrote out, he's like, we win. He wants to win this preseason game so badly. Obviously, he cares much, much more about winning September the 11th, but I think he wants to get one win under their belt, and I think he thinks tonight is the night to do it.
Absolutely, and I think for Hugh Jackson, it solidifies the mantra and the message he's been giving this football team probably on a daily basis since he got this job and started texting and calling with the players who were still enjoying their offseason. That's been the message. I want you to win. I need you to play your best and be ready to play your best in 2016 because everything's going to be different. It's going to look different, feel different, and we're going to win and we're going to compete at another level. And at this point right now, they've gone out twice. They've looked good. But, you know, when it comes to the winners and you know, the winning and losing column, they're 0-2. So to get that satisfaction of we put forth the effort, we believed in our coach, and it ended up with success is what's thriving and what's really motivating Hugh Jackson to get a win tonight and have these guys go, he is right. When we do these things, and it's not just a few, it's a laundry list of things. When we do them and we check a lot of boxes, good things happen and we put ourselves in situations to win football games.
That's what it's all about, and hopefully the Browns will go out there and get that first win of the preseason tonight against Tampa Bay at 8 o'clock. When we come back, we'll kick off our second hour with Nate Ulrich from the Akron Beacon Journal on the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. He will talk to us about his takeaway so far about this team, what he's looking for tonight, and much, much more. Plus, we want to hear from you, 216-578-0850. Cleveland Browns Daily here on ESPN 850 WKNR.